Part 16, Chapter 2. Johnny threw the book from him and pushed away his lunch, untouched. The guard at the door looked in through the glass, abruptly alert. Colonel Ivan whirled in an automatic response, combat ready. It had sounded like the thud of a grenade for a moment.
It makes no sense,
said Johnny to himself.
It just makes no sense.
The others, seeing it was no emergency, relaxed. The sentry returned to his usual position and the colonel went on wiping down the white tile. But Chrissy remained alarmed. It was almost unheard of for Johnny to be irritable, and for days and days now, ever since he had started to do nothing but study books, cyclo books they seemed to be, though she could not read, he had been getting worse and worse. The untouched lunch worried her. It was venison stew with wild herbs cooked especially for him by Aunt Ellen. Weeks ago, she had rushed to the old base to give him a glad and relieved greeting and to tell him that though her fears for him had almost come true, here he was alive. She had stood around, suffused with delight, until she suddenly saw what they were feeding him. The old village was only a few miles away down the pass, and either personally or through a small boy mounted on one of the horses Johnny had left, Aunt Ellen routinely sent him his favorite dishes to be warmed up and served from the hospital galley. The boy, or Aunt Ellen, usually waited to take back the utensils, and when Aunt Ellen saw the food had not been touched, she would be upset. Chrissy vowed to get the sentry to eat some and maybe gobble a few bites herself. It wouldn't be polite to send back an untouched venison stew. Had he been able to walk easily, Johnny would have gone over and kicked the book. Normally, he had vast respect for books, but not this one. It and several similar texts were all on the subject of the mathematics of teleportation. They seemed incomprehensible. Cycloarithmetic was bad enough. Johnny supposed that because cyclos had 6 talons on their right paws and 5 on their left, they had to go and choose 11 as their base. All their mathematics was structured around the number 11. Johnny had been told that human mathematics employed a decimal system involving 10 as the radix. He wouldn't know. He only knew cyclomathematics. But these mathematics of teleportation soared above normal cycloarithmetic. The book he had just thrown down had begun to give him a headache, and these days his headaches had almost vanished. The book was called Elementary Principles of Integral Teleportation Equations. And if that was elementary, give him something complicated. Nothing added up in it at all. He pushed back from the metal dolly table and rose shakily, supporting himself with his left hand on the bed.
I,
he said in a determined voice,
am going to get out of here. There is no sense just waiting around for the sky to fall in on us. Where's my shirt?
This was something new. The colonel went over to help Johnny stand, and Johnny brushed him away. He could stand by himself. Chrissy turned around in a flurry and opened 3 or 4 wrong bureau drawers. The colonel picked up a handful of assorted canes and sticks that stood in the corner and knocked half of them down. The sentry, ordered to report any unusual happenings to Robert the Fox, got on the radio phone right away. Johnny chose a knob carry. McKendrick had had him practicing with a lot of different canes. It was difficult because both his right arm and right leg were seemingly useless, and carrying a stick in the left hand and hopping on the left leg didn't work very well. The knob carry had been brought in as a gift from a chief in Africa who didn't know Johnny was crippled. The black wooden stick was beautifully carved. They used them as throwing weapons, as well as canes. They must be big men down there, because it was the right length. It also had a comfortable palm grip. Johnny hobbled over to the bureau and half sat on it and got rid of the military hospital robe. Chrissy had found 3 buckskin shirts, and some perverseness made him select the oldest and greasiest one. He got it over his head and let her lace the thongs across the front of it. He got into some buckskin pants, and Chrissy helped him with a pair of moccasins. He struggled with a drawer and got it open. One of the shoemakers had made him a left-handed holster and had more properly fitted the old gold belt buckle to a wide belt. He put them on over the shirt. The holster had a .457 Magnum Smith & Wesson on it with radiation slugs, and he lifted it out and laid it back in the drawer and got out a small blast gun, made sure it was charged, and dropped it in the holster. At the colonel's odd look, Johnny said,
"I'm not going to kill any cyclos today."
He was engaged in stuffing his right hand into the belt to get it out of the way. That arm tended to dangle when an uproar broke out in the passageway. Johnny was intent on leaving, so he gave it little heed. It would be just Robert the Fox or the parson rushing over to fuss at him about council business. But it wasn't. The door burst open, and the base officer of the day, a big middle-aged Scot in kilts and claymore, a man named Captain Macduff, rushed in.
"Johnny, sir!"
said Macduff. Johnny had the definite impression they were objecting to his leaving, and he was about to be impolite when the captain sputtered the rest of the message.
"Johnny, sir, did you send for a cyclo?"
Johnny was looking for a fur cap to wear. They had shaved his hair off for those operations, and he felt like a singed puma bareheaded. Then the import of the question hit him. He got the knob carry and unsteadily hitched forward and peered out the door. There stood Kerr. And in the glaring mine lamps out there, he was a very bedraggled creature. Kerr's fur was matted with the filth clinging to it. His fangs, seen through the faceplate, were yellow and stained. His tunic was all ripped down one side, and he had on only one boot, no cap. Even his ear bones looked messed up. They had put four chains on him with a soldier at the far end of each one. It looked so overdone on the midget cyclo.
"Poor Kerr,"
said Johnny.
"Did you send for him, Johnny, sir?"
demanded Captain Macduff.
"Bring him in here,"
said Johnny, leaning back against the bureau. He felt amusement mingling with pity.
"Do you think that's wise?"
said Macduff. But he waved them forward. Johnny told the soldiers to drop the ends of the chains and leave. Four more soldiers he hadn't noticed backed up, assault rifles trained on Kerr. He told them all to leave. The colonel was flabbergasted. Chrissy wrinkled her nose. What a stink! She'd have to clean and air the whole place. No one wanted to go. Johnny saw the pleading look through Kerr's breathe mask. He waved them all out, and it was with enormous reluctance that they closed the door.
"I had to tell the lie,"
said Kerr.
"I just had to see you, Johnny."
"You sure haven't put a comb to yourself lately."
"It's a devil's cauldron they've got me in. I'm half crazy these days. I dropped from his planet ship down to gooey dirt, Johnny. I got only one shaft mate, and that's you, Johnny."
"I don't know how or why you got yourself here, but..."
"It's this."
Kerr dove a dirty paw inside his torn shirt, oblivious of the fact that a more nervous Johnny might have shot him. Johnny could draw, if a trifle slowly, with his left hand. But Johnny knew Kerr. Held before Johnny's eyes was a banknote. He took it with some curiosity. He had only seen these at a distance in the hands of cyclos paying off wagers, and he had never held one before. He knew they were a basic symbol of exchange and greatly valued. It was about 6 inches wide and a foot long. The paper felt a bit rough, but it seemed to glow. One side of it was printed in blue and the other side in orange. It had a nebula pattern and bright starburst on it. But the remarkable thing was that it was worded in what must be 30 languages, 30 numeral systems, 30 different types of lettering. Ah, one of them was cyclo. Johnny could read that. He read,
"The Galactic Bank."
And,
"100 Galactic Credits."
And,
"Guaranteed legal tender for all transactions."
And,
"K counterfeiters will be vaporized.
And?
Certified exchangeable at the Galactic Bank on presentation.
It had a picture of somebody or something on the blue side. It looked like a humanoid. Or maybe a Tolnep somebody had mistaken Dunaldine for. Or maybe. Who knew? The face was very dignified, the very portrait of integrity. On the reverse, it had a similar sized picture of an imposing building with innumerable arches. All very interesting, but Johnny had determined to do other things today. He gave it back to Kerr and started to fish out his own cap again. He felt sort of embarrassed with such a shaved head. Kerr looked a bit let down.
That's 100 credits! It isn't a Cyclo bank. The Cyclos and everybody else use those. It's not counterfeit, I can tell. See how it glows? And these little fine lines here around the signature?
You trying to bribe me or something?
Said Johnny, discarding the cap he had found, and looking for a colored bandana instead.
Why, no! Look, this money is no good to me now, Johnny. Look!
Johnny propped himself more comfortably on the bureau edge and obediently looked. Kerr, with a glance at the door to make sure he had his back to it and that only Johnny could see, dramatically threw aside his lapels and pulled the tattered tunic apart. There was a brand on his chest.
The 3 bars of denial. The criminal scorch. I don't think it's any news to you I was a criminal. That's one of the holds Turl had on me. That's why he felt he could trust me to run around and teach you. If I was returned to Cyclo, having been found to hold false papers and employment, I'd be vaporized. If Cyclo recaptured this place, they'd be sure those of us alive were renegades, and they'd examine us and find this. My papers are false. I won't burden you with my real name. Not knowing it, you can't be hit as an accessory. Got it?
Johnny didn't have it at all, especially since the Cyclos would kill him on sight and not be troubled at all about accessory. He nodded. All this wasn't getting anywhere. Where had Chrissy put the bandanas they'd found?
And if in addition they found 2 billion galactic credits on me, they'd do a slow vaporization.
2 billion?
Yes, well, it seemed old Numph had been screwing the company for the whole 30 years of his duty tour here. Things not even Turl had dug up. Things like commissions from the female administrators who charged. Things like double prices on Kerbango. Maybe even selling ore to aliens who picked it up in space shifts. Who knew? But Numph slept on 4 mattresses, and Kerr thought it was funny they crinkled like that. And he liked only 1 mattress. So he'd ripped open an end, and there it was.
Where?
Out in the hall.
The midget Cyclo closed his coat, and Johnny beckoned at the guard in the small door window. Kerr darted out through the door, loose chains dragging, alarming everyone out there, and came back lugging a big box, which he dumped. Then he rushed out and got another box. Although a midget, only a bit taller than Johnny, Kerr was very strong. Before anybody stopped him, and despite the flapping chains, Kerr shortly had the room bulging with old Kerbango boxes, and every one of them was overflowing with galactic credits.
There's more in his numbered accounts on Cyclo, but we can't get that.
He stood there, panting a big smile, very proud of himself.
Now you can pay the renegades like the champ goes in cash!
Captain Macduff had been trying to tell Johnny they'd checked the boxes while making sure there were no explosives, and still ask what was this stuff, all the while wanting to know how Johnny had sent a message to the compound without it being known to the sentries, and was it all right that they had let Kerr bring it. He was flustered. He had a Cyclo running around flapping chains, and Johnny was laughing.
And you want...
said Johnny to Kerr.
I want out of that prison!
Wailed Kerr.
They hate me because I was over them. They hated me anyway, Johnny. I know machines. Didn't I teach you to run every machine there is? I heard they have a machine school over at what you call the academy. They don't know anything about those machines. Not like you and me do. Let me go help teach them like I did you.
He stood there so pathetically, so pleadingly. He was so convinced he had done the right thing that Johnny laughed and laughed, and shortly Kerr's mouth bones started to grin.
I think it's a great idea, Kerr,
said Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
At that moment, he looked up and saw a frosty Robert the Fox in the door. Johnny shifted to English.
Sir Robert, I think we have a new instructor for the schoolmaster. It's true he's a great machine operator and he knows them all.
He smiled at Kerr and said in Cyclo,
Terms of employment, a quart of Kerbango a day, full pay and bonuses, standard company contract, omitting only burial on Cyclo, right?
He knew very well Kerr probably had buried a few hundred thousand credits on his own. Kerr started bobbing his head emphatically. He had held a few hundred thousand against a rainy day. He held out a paw to bash paws with Johnny. That done, he was about to leave when he turned and came very close to Johnny, speaking with the Cyclo equivalent of whispering.
I got one more thing for you, Johnny. They put Turl in a cage. You watch Turl, Johnny. He's up to something.
When the midget Cyclo had left, Robert the Fox looked at these bales and bales of money.
Job bribery. Comes high these days. Turn it over to the council.
He was laughing.
This is galactic money, isn't it?
Said Robert the Fox.
I'm going to contact a Scot named McAdam at the university in the Highlands. He knows about money.
But he was wondering at seeing Johnny dressed. He was more than glad Johnny had cheered up, even though he thought the lad foolhardy for letting a Cyclo so close to him. One rake of a set of claws could cost one half his face. Then he realized Johnny was hobbling forward, going out. He looked his question.
I may not be able to hold the sky up, but I don't have to wait forever for it to fall either. I'm headed for the compound.
He had to talk to the Chamco brothers. He had heard they were making absolutely no progress on repairing the transshipment stage, and without that, they never would find out about Cyclo.